Welcome to Bootstrap MD, the Physician Entrepreneurs Podcast, your source to help you, the entrepreneurial doctor, live life on your own terms. Get new ideas and inspiration to help you find more balance in your professional life. If you're ready to get the knowledge without all the hype, you've come to the right place. It's the Bootstrap MD Podcast. And now your host, Dr. Mike Wu Ming.
Doctors change lives every day, but what happens when life changes yours? A single injury, a sudden illness, your career, your income, your future can shift in an instant. The best physicians don't just plan for success, they protect it. At Set for Life Insurance, they believe financial security isn't a luxury, it's a necessity. True owned occupational disability insurance ensures that no matter what happens, your future stays in your hands. Because protecting your income means protecting everything you built. Visit drpodcastnetwork.co/setforlife today. Secure your future before life makes a choice for you.
Hey guys, it's Dr. Mike Wu Ming. Welcome to another edition of Bootstrap MD, the podcast for physician and healthcare entrepreneurs. Today I'm interviewing one of my favorite guests. He's a friend of the program. He's been there almost since the beginning. We're now at, I think, John, I'm like 250 plus. I know it doesn't escalate the number of episodes that you've done, but you've been there from almost the beginning. And I don't think you need much introduction, but I think we get new listeners all the time. So if you don't know John, he's synonymous for being an expert in non-clinical careers, not traditional careers for physicians. If you're a doctor right now and you think the only way I can make money is seeing patients, then I think you're going to get a lot out of today's interview. So I'd like to introduce my good friend, John Jerica. John, how are you doing?
I am doing very well. I'm very happy to be back here. It's good to see you again, Mike.
Good to see you. So like I said, I think a lot of people know your name. You've been around. We both have been around in talking about non-traditional careers, non-traditional paths for doctors. But I'd like to get to know the man behind the legend of John Jerica, because I remember I was there at the beginning when you were posting on Facebook and just, you know, maybe finding your own path, and now since founded and now is coaching and consulting with other doctors to help them with their path. So let's talk about yourself, your background, you know, what you specialize in, and maybe where you are in your career for right now.
All right. Well, I'm trained as a family physician. I practice for I'm still licensed. I'm still practicing now. So let's see, it'll be, 38 years, let's put it that way. And I was a CMO for a hospital for 14 years. And during that time, for 4 years, I stopped practicing completely. And then I went back into it when I opened up some urgent care centers with some colleagues and a partner who's actually the CEO. And I am the medical director and part owner. And when I did that, I got interested in looking at these non-clinical careers because I had a little more time on my hands. Once I left the hospital setting, it was a little slow at the beginning. We started from scratch. So I would be at the clinic and I would have time to do other things. And I got interested in this. And so I started investigating it. I started my podcast, Physician Non-Clinical Careers, to learn about these non-traditional and non-clinical careers. Then I started doing some courses. I started an academy called Non-Clinical Career Academy, which is at nonclinicalcareeracademy.com. You can check that out if you're interested. It's just some lectures. And actually, I'm doing a weekly Q&A now. I have about 27 of those posted inside that academy. And then last year, I had a partner and I, Tom Davis, some of you may know him. He and I started something called NewScript, which we have since closed. But one of the things we did before we closed it is that we did a summit last year. It was 12 hours of lectures over 3 nights. It was live, it was on Zoom, had live Q&A. And we had people come and talk about non-clinical careers, non-traditional careers, you know, things like the locums and telemedicine and all the other UM jobs and things like that. And so even though we stopped NewScript, we're still continuing with the summit. So that's my latest big project. So this is what I'm doing now.
I love it too. And like I said, you know, some people ask, you know, why do you do podcasts? And for one of the reasons that we do it is because we're actually looking to learn ourselves. I know you started your podcast because there wasn't a lot of information in these areas. I think I may have come across like some manual from the AMA called like leaving the bedside or something like that.
Yep.
And with that, it was, you know, giving you like a slight eye, like, I'm sure you want to kind of do this. But there wasn't a lot of information. What if you learn from having your podcast in terms of the different careers that are out there? Because I think we both realize that there's a lot more out there than we initially thought.
Yeah, when I started this, I didn't really know what was out there other than what I had already done. I was a physician advisor at the hospital for US, so I knew that. I was a medical director for a while, then I was a CMO. But outside of that, I didn't know. And it turns out there's at least 8 or 9 major industries that hire physicians, and you've got all the stuff they can do on their own. And so I've been exposed to this. And the thing I've noticed too is at the beginning, it was like everybody wanted to do something really simple, quit their job as a physician for whatever reason and do something where they could work for someone else, like doing or being a physician advisor or medical director. But, you know, on the podcast, I keep learning about new things and things that didn't even exist 5 or 10 years ago. And so my opinion has changed about what physicians can and should do. Not that there's one thing, but I think we don't give ourselves enough credit. And if we can find a better way to pull in our medical knowledge and help clients or patients and still maintain control, which is one of the things we really hate about being in practice sometimes, is losing the control to a corporate employer. It's been eye-opening for the last few years. I mean, I started the podcast, I think, 6 years ago now. So it's been fun.
Now, I know you've mentored a wide variety of physicians, different types of specialties. Do you see, is there like a common thread that you see, or is there like a recommended type of physician that should be attracted to these type of careers? You know, some might say, well, if you're a physician just out of residency, you shouldn't even be looking at these things because you don't know what is actually out there. Or is it for just someone who's in mid-career? I mean, are you seeing anything, or what do you recommend for the doctors out there that are listening to this interview?
In terms of the timing of it?
Yeah.
It used to be we were kind of mostly looking at physicians who had been in practice 20, 30 years. They were getting burned out and nearing retirement, so they need some kind of transition or do something that isn't so intense. You know, it's difficult after 30 years of doing surgery or intense medical care. You know, you just get worn out. But really, it's this, the demand for it is at all ages. In fact, I had a question like, I think, less than a week ago. Someone saying, well, I'm a resident and I'm not going to do clinical care. I've decided. I forget he was an internist. He said, I'm not going to do it. What are my options? So it can hit at any point. As you've probably noticed too, if you talk to med students and the residents, they're already burnt out. And they think the next step is going to take them and they'll be less burned out. But then they find out when they get into practice, they're actually as burned out or worse than they were in residency and in med school. So unfortunately, this is the way, you know, life is here in the United States.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And again, I think did a lot of these opportunities occur, like you said, in the last 5-10 years, a lot occur because of the pandemic? I mean, I know that for many doctors, they looked at the career a lot differently.
Oh, absolutely. The pandemic did a lot of things to accelerate all of the remote jobs. There were jobs that had been remote, even forays into telemedicine, you know, and just some of the work that was being done on site. But with the pandemic, they had to do it remotely. So now, like you can be an expert witness. That's a common job that people do part-time. It's almost all remote now. You even can testify in court remotely. You can do depositions remotely. So that part has changed a lot. It's affected a lot of different non-traditional jobs.
Now, as we were talking about the interview, you wanted to talk about what you consider your favorite non-traditional careers for physicians. So I'm eager to hear this. So what are your 3 favorite type of jobs that are non-traditional for doctors?
I want to talk about this because it really has changed for me in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years as I've been talking to more and more people. So I'm not going to go into all the what I've talked about and heard about, but I found people, and the reason is some of my guests have really mastered these jobs. And it seems to me a little more easy to discuss and train someone to do it than it used to be. And so this is why I think these 3 in particular stand out for me. So I'm going to do the reverse order, 3, 2, 1 with my number one top job. So the first one is medical writer. Now, people think of medical writing as, oh, you know, I can do that part-time while I'm still clinical and it's time consuming and can I really make money at it? But it's a great job and it's really been honed over the last 10 years to make it, the pay is good. If once you get enough clients or publishers that hire you and what have you, usually as a freelancer, though, rather than as an employee. The hours are flexible. Location is flexible. There's multiple genres you can do. You can eventually become an editor. There's management position. You can start before leaving your clinical job. So that's always nice. We do have an advantage when we're medical writers that a lot of us don't understand. A lot of medical writers are not physicians. And for us to write an article on a particular medical topic, let's say whether it's a CME or for patients, we can do that a lot quicker than some master's level writer or a nurse who's a writer, somebody like that. So really, we can be much more efficient, and that means we get paid more on a per hour basis because we can generate more output. You can do it as an independent contractor or as an employee. And there's just lots of good examples of people are doing that. They're working while they're traveling with their family. They have a great lifestyle, and they're definitely making a good salary. So that's my number three. I would even consider that myself if I was starting over somewhere in my mid-career.
Just to go a little bit deeper, what types of companies are hiring medical writers?
Well, medical writers can find jobs or freelance opportunities at a lot of companies, that some of which they don't realize. There are CME companies, of course, that hire them. Most of those are freelance. You can work for a publishing company that's publishing to the public, and they will also take submissions. You can work for companies that publish for physicians, whether it's CME or non-CME, journalistic writing. Now, in the pharma field, you can do technical writing, but there's some that's kind of not quite 100% technical, and most of the companies that hire writers for pharmacies, or pharmaceutical companies rather, aren't the pharmaceutical companies. It's actually a CRO, and that's a way to get in a little bit easier. Again, freelancer. You build these relationships. And I'm trying to think of the other big companies. Any kind of an educational company that deals with healthcare related topics or public health will hire physician writers.
America spends more on healthcare than any other country, yet we rank 48th in life expectancy. We spend trillions, but 200,000 insured people still declare medical bankruptcy every year. Clearly, the system is broken. But what if there was a way to take back control, to break free from inflated costs and red tape? That's exactly what CrowdHealth was created, a smarter, more transparent way to pay for healthcare. No middlemen, no bureaucracy, just a community helping each other when it matters most. Join the revolution. Go to joincrowdhealth.com. and use promo code BootstrapMD for a discount on your first 3 months. Because your health should be in your hands, not theirs. Great. Let's hear your second choice.
Okay. Now, second one is a lot of your audience maybe still has not heard of this. We've all heard of expert witness consulting. It's been around forever. But there's something called medical legal consulting or medical legal pre-litigation consulting. And this is something really that hasn't been a separate thing until the last about 10 or 12 years. There's actually a physician named Armin Feldman, maybe you know him, but he's the one that started this in earnest and actually has shared what he does with other physicians like myself. I've actually gone through his course. So when you do medical legal consulting, you're actually not ever going to do a deposition. You're never going to go to court. What you're doing is you're reviewing all of the records from an injured patient. It could be auto accident, could be workers' comp, could be any kind of personal injury. And you're serving as simply a consultant to wade through that, organize it, explain to your attorney client what is going on and whether the other side of the litigation has accepted responsibility for all the injuries that you discover and all the consequences of those injuries. Actually, any physician who's been in practice can do this. So you're not an expert. You're a generalist looking at a chart on any type of patient. You just have to be meticulous and have the time. It pays much higher on an hourly basis than most medical care. You can start this while you're still working clinically also. And it's just a lot more flexible. And you can do it remotely. And the hours are flexible as well. So this one has really been something new. It's so interesting because Dr. Feldman has actually started his own podcast in which he describes these cases. And so if you're interested, you can just listen to the podcast. I think it's Physicians Helping Attorneys, Helping Patients or something. and you can get a feel for it and do this either at the end of your career or as an adjunct to your career. And that's one of the things you really can't do as an expert witness. Most expert witnesses have to remain in practice. You could do this even after retirement once you learn how to do it. So that one has really intrigued me. And that's why I put it on my list today.
And just to kind of clarify that too, it is physicians helping attorneys.
Right. You look that up and you'll find that. And they have, I don't know, about 30 episodes or so. And it's really quite interesting. And I think some of your listeners might find it intriguing.
All right. So we talked about medical writing. We've talked about this medical legal type of consultant. What is your number one non-traditional career?
Okay. So my number one, I've come to this, to the conclusion that the best opportunity for those physicians who, you know, are really looking for something to do, and it's similar to what you teach, basically, this is a broad and what it is a clinical, or what I might call a clinical light business, clinically related business. So, I mean, it could be DPC or something like that, but it's other things like aesthetics and med spas and infusion centers, or even something like my wife is doing, which I can use as an example in a minute. But the thing that I like is to be able to create your own business. You can be the CEO of your life and your business, as you write about in your book. You're not really accountable to other people. You can scale it. You can hire a bunch of people to extend your reach. And even sometimes it can be something that you passively supervise. And not only can you earn more if, you know, if it's successful, and most of these really are if they're planned properly. But the thing that we forget is that generally they become an asset that is, you can sell at the end. And that's the thing that really, when I have interviewed the med spa owners, and particularly one that I'll mention that sold her med spa, and even in talking with my wife now, because we're getting ready to sell her business. So let me tell you about her business a little bit. So she decided about 15 years ago that she wanted to do something after she stopped working as a respiratory therapist. And so she looked around and she was interested in doing something that would be very helpful to people, kind of like clinical medicine, a service. And so she opened a franchise for a senior care business, we'll call it that. It's in-home personal care. It's not home health. And so she started doing that and built that up over time. And ultimately now it's been 15 years and she's generating like 200 to 300K a year in whatever you want to call it, combination of salary and I guess distributions. She loves taking care of seniors. She has a great reputation in the community. And basically, since it's time to sell, then we'll get basically almost like selling a house that has no mortgage. You're going to get this big asset, which can just go into your retirement, you know, part of your retirement plan. So I like that idea. And I think there's a lot of things like you've talked about, and as I've mentioned here earlier, that it's just, it's a great thing, and it really leverages all of a physician's skills. Most of us have to learn a little bit more about business, but I think at the end of the day, it's going to be the most fulfilling thing, and financially might be the best option. I mean, you can work for a hospital as a CMO for $300,000-$400,000 a year and try to put all that money away, but when you quit, all you have is what you put into it in terms of retirement accounts. It's not like you really have an asset. So that's why I'm really getting interested in that. I'll mention a couple of other examples, if that's okay. I know Jason Ryan, he was on my podcast a long time ago, a few years ago, and he started Boards and Beyond, which was designed to, it was just an educational platform to teach his medical students where he was working. Well, he did that for about 10 years, and he sold that to McGraw-Hill in 2022. Now, I don't know what they paid for that, but I'm sure he got a big cash out of that. Same thing, Greg Hansen, he was running something called FlipMD, where he was helping clinicians to find consulting gigs. It was kind of like a tech thing, really, because it's like an app. And he sold that 2 years after starting it to GoodRx. And again, it probably had a great cash out. So, I mean, not everyone's going to have that kind of turnaround. I mean, you know, my wife's franchise took years to build, but I think physicians could do it, and they're just going to be, it's like running your own practice, but without insurance and a corporate, you know, like going to the hospital and have to deal with the corporate mentality over there.
Yeah, I love that. Interesting enough, Greg and I actually went to the same high school together.
Really?
Yeah. And but I'm much older. He has many classes over. What I think one of the key things is, and trying to kind of classify these type of health related businesses, is the physician is not the integral component of providing that service. If you notice this, that whether it's as I'm the owner of like a med spa or with your wife, she's the owner. She's not performing as like a respiratory therapist performing these type of services. It's because if you are the physician and you're the integral part of the business, you're never going to be able to sell that business. We see this with solo practitioners who work 34 years. Nobody's going to buy it because nobody's going to pay for that physician salary. For the most part, is nobody's going to usually have to do it. It's where the business is providing some type of product or some type of service. And that's what's attractive to the McGraw-Hills, to these other different companies, GoodRxS, because that's an asset that they can use. That sort of value, and it's not essential for the physician to be seeing patients, which is, it seems, you know, kind of intuitive, but we see again, all these solo practitioners who like, I worked there for all these years, and I unfortunately, nobody really wants to purchase that practice for the most part.
Well, yeah, I know when I was a CMO, I was helping my hospital purchase practices, and they had a little bit of wiggle room where they could kind of entice the physician. But the physicians were always completely frustrated by the fact that they could maybe get $100,000 for their practice. That was it. They thought they had this million-dollar asset, but it's like, no, the hospital's got to hire physicians to do your job, or they have to keep you on as an employee, which is where all the income goes to. In fact, hospitals lose $100,000 per employed physician on average. So there's nothing there unless you build something that has these other services or, you know, I see some good ortho groups and GI groups where they'll have a lab and they'll have a surge center and things like that, which they can get some value from that.
Some assets, equipment, sure. But for the most part, it's if you can take yourself out of the business in some capacity where you're not the rate limiting step, as we learned in chemistry, you're going to be a lot ahead of most other doctors who own business.
Absolutely. So that's my new favorite. I think it's where I'm going to retire on that note.
Okay, I've been sprinting this for years, so again.
Exactly, I know. I'm coming back to Mike Wu-Ming. After all these years, he tried to beat this into me, and it's true.
Any last-minute thoughts before we end the call today?
Well, I guess the last-minute thought I'd go back to is why we started all this way back when. It's that we're here to help our colleagues. You don't need to be miserable in your job. It just, there's no need for that. Even though it's hard work, okay, fine, you got through the residency fellowship. Once you're working, you should look forward to going to work. If you wake up every day hating the thought of going to work, if you don't like the schedule that you have, please change something. Maybe you just need to find another location, another boss, maybe a different type of practice. Whatever it is, you should be happy. You should enjoy your job every day. And so if you need to find someone like Mike or me to help you or do it on your own, but just make a change and keep looking for that perfect job for yourself.
Love the words of wisdom, John. Thank you for spending the time with us. John, thank you again for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Hope to see you again soon.
And thank you all for listening. As John said, if you're not stuck, if you feel like you're stuck, there's always different options that are out there. Maybe a new look, new career, new boss, new path for being a physician. As we know, there's so many different paths to go into as you'll learn. Do something every single day to keep you closer to your goals and keep moving forward.
You've just listened to the Bootstrap MD podcast. For more valuable resources, as well as past recordings of our show, check out our website at bootstrapmd.com. Now let's get to work.